We are glad that you are here. It's the first Sunday of the year. I always like to try and take this time and just focus in on a couple of things. This is such an important Sunday as we kind of pivot into a new year. And I just like to talk about prayer on this Sunday. I like to talk about these kind of things. And so I just want to today kind of go through this idea of being ready, being prepared in prayer for what comes up. How many of you, like, 2025 was your year? Like, it was the year that you will look back on fondly for the rest of your life. Like, okay, everyone's like, can I raise my hand? How many of you are like, it was a great year? 2025 was a great year for you. Yeah, okay, there's a few of you out there. That's okay. It's okay. How many of you, 2025, you look back on that one, you're like, let's not do that again. Anybody? Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it's different for everybody, right? That's okay. We all have different years. We all have different experiences. Different things happen as we go throughout our year. No one's going to have the exact same things happen. It's okay to have a good year in church. That's all right, okay? You can say that that's true, that's okay. But as we go through these kind of things, as we go through the year, some of you went through some serious trials this year. Medically, I mean, you had some sicknesses that happened over and over and over again. You had some of those kind of things, I know. Some of you, I know, you had an awesome year. Like, great things happened for you. There were babies born in 2025, huh? Woo! Those are good things. There's one right back there. Like, those are good days. We have some good times. We have some tough times. And I just want to talk about this story in the Bible that usually is talked about in kids ministry. And then we almost never reference it again unless we're talking about the end times. And we're not talking about the end times today. Okay. We're just going to talk about this story that I think is so important. How many of you have heard the story of Daniel in the lion's den? Right? Like, how many of you have heard that story, right? How many of you, the last time you heard it was when it was on a flannel graph in like Sunday school? Anyone? Like it's just kind of one of those things where we talk about it so often in kids ministry. And please, I'm not saying we shouldn't. It's a great story. It's a great story of faith. It's one of those things. And I find so much depth in this story, so much that is so important for us as we go. And I just want to encourage you as we go through this story to kind of look at some of what Daniel did to prepare for some of these moments in his life, okay? So to set up the story, to set up the stage, if you turn to Daniel chapter 1, and I'm not going to read the whole story leading up to this, but you will see for generations, okay? And some of you have been asking me questions about this. You read the Bible in a year last year, and so you got to Isaiah and Ezekiel, and you got into like some of those prophets out there, and you're like, how many times did God have to wipe out Israel, okay? Those people were contemporaries of each other, right? They're writing at nearly the same time, all those prophets. And one of the things that can be confusing is Israel, under David's grandson, divides into two separate kingdoms, right? Like, there is the northern kingdom of Israel and there's the southern kingdom of Judah at this point in time, okay? Right? So David, like, he comes in and he sets things up and he taxes people and he brings people in for the army. And then Solomon goes even higher, right? Solomon goes in even harder. And then Rehoboam, Solomon's son, his advisors come to him and they're like, we need to take it easy. We need to dial back what we're demanding from the people. And Rehoboam is like, you think my dad was tough? Like, that's nothing compared to what I'm going to do. And Israel is like, fine, we're done. And they split evenly, not even evenly. It's like 10 tribes and 2 tribes, right? Like they split that way. And we have now Israel and we have Judah. And so what happens is in these stories, right? In the story of Daniel and in these things, we see Babylon and Assyria separately come in and take out the northern and southern kingdom of Israel. Okay, like that's just what happens, right? And so they come in and they storm in and they take the people of Israel captive. And one of the things that the Babylonians especially did, this is where Greece and Rome learned this, was from watching the Babylonian Empire, right? They come in and when they take over, they take the best and the brightest and they brainwash them. That's the goal, right? They take the best and the brightest. They take kids. They take young men in particular who look like they have a lot of promise, and they take them and they roll them through this Babylonian brainwashing session to turn them into Babylonians, and then they will send them back to their homeland so they will rule as Babylonians where they're at. And I need you to hear that, because sometimes we read about these boys being taken captive, and since we last heard it as children, our mind just makes it nice and clean and neat, right? These were children. These were junior hires. They would have ranged from between the ages of about 10 and maybe 16 on the top end, right? And they're forcibly taken from their homes. They're brought into slavery, and they begin to try and brainwash them with the religion, the gods, and the rules of the Babylonian Empire. That's the goal. Turn them into Babylonians. It was violent, it was abusive, and it was serious. And they did it to kids. Children were the targets. And Daniel is one of these kids. Daniel's one of those kids. I need you to imagine how much confidence in God it took for a couple of Hebrew boys who were taken captive. They're the only four. They took way more than four, right? But there's four that are mentioned as they will not bow down. Understand, for generations, Israel has been evil. Judah has been doing, I shouldn't say evil. I shouldn't say they are evil. They are doing evil things, right? You can track back at this time. If you read through Kings and Chronicles, they're even offering their own children in sacrifice to gods that are not God. Like, they have walked away from the God of Abraham. And somehow, in the middle of all of that, of generations of them abandoning their faith, these four boys, after being taken from their homes and the Babylonians are trying to brainwash them, they stand for God. It is such a miracle that we gloss over so often, because the last time we heard it was from VeggieTales. And there's nothing wrong, please, there's nothing wrong with teaching kids as kids. The struggle is when we as adults still only understand the Bible as children. Right? Like, this is such a big deal. This is a monumental act of faith, right? And you know this, you've probably heard this story, right? We don't know where Daniel is in this, but the Nebuchadnezzar makes this big golden statue, right? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego won't bow down, and all of these kind of things. And we see all of these turning points in the story. Nebuchadnezzar seems to give his life over to the God of the Israelites at different times. And like, we see all of these amazing things happening because these four boys will not bow to other kings. They will not abandon the God of Abraham, who has become their God. And they're elevated into these positions of authority and power in a foreign land. Now, I want you to just imagine. Now, I would like to think that as human beings in America, we don't straight up murder the people who oppose us in government, positions. I'd like to think that we're past that. You just do you, okay? But... It's America, and it's 2026. I know crazy things have happened in the history of our country, and I know crazy things are happening today in our country, but like, we're straight up not throwing people into lion's den yet, right? Okay, so we can at least agree on that so far. At least I haven't heard of anyone, a political opponent being thrown into a den of lions yet. Okay, so what happens is these boys, these outsiders, are supposedly brainwashed, but they won't even brainwash right, because they trust in their God so much, and now they're being put in positions of authority and power over entrenched bureaucrats. How do you think that's going to go? It doesn't go great today, right? Like, that never goes well even now. Now imagine there are no rules, and the strongest survive, and that's encouraged. If you can kill your political opponent, it just shows you're better than them. That's the world that this is happening in. These are outsiders. They've come into favor with the emperor of the known world at this point in time. And people are upset about it. And that's the story we come into, right? Like that's the story we come into. And I want to start in Daniel chapter 6, verse 16. Daniel chapter 6, verse 16. Daniel chapter 6, verse 16. I'm going to read out of the New Living Translation. If you like to see the same words that I'm going to read, that's the one to hit in your YouVersion app, okay? Daniel 6, 16. So at last the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. The king said to him, may your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you. Get it? Even the king understands how faithful Daniel is to his God. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seal of his nobles so no one could rescue Daniel. That's one of the things they do, okay? So again, for special circumstances, right? For special people who the king especially despises, people who he finds especially repulsive, they kept a den of lions. And this is like, you can find this in places outside of the Bible. Babylonians were famous for this, okay? And the whole goal was to keep those lions right on the point of starvation, right? Like not let them die, but keep them right at that point where they will kill and eat anything they see. Right now, again, please, I understand as kids on the flannel graph and on VeggieTales, those lions are really neat and clean looking, right? It's like Simba's pride, you know, like they're all put together and it's all like fancy lighting and all this stuff. Now, what you need to really imagine is lions where ribs are poking out and joints are showing and they're all full of scratches and scars because they're probably killing each other if they forget to feed them often enough. Like these are wild, powerful animals who are starving. And in they throw Daniel. And it's actually a sign of honor to Daniel that they closed the door. Because usually it was sport. Let's watch them. Let's watch the lions tear him apart. So they throw Daniel in and they seal it up. And there's seals in the wax all over the place to make sure if you roll that stone, we're going to know. If someone tries and saves Daniel, we're going to know about it. Because all these seals are going to be broken. I need you to pick this up right here, okay? Verse 17, a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles so that no one could rescue Daniel. 18, then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. We're not told yet that Nebuchadnezzar is a man serving the God of Abraham, but where do you think he learned fasting? This was not part of the Babylonian worship. Where do you think he learned fasting from? Watching four Hebrew boys who rose to power. He refused his usual entertainment. If you don't know what that means, ask the adult next to you. And couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early the next morning, the king got up and hurried out to the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions? Listen, he's got a little bit of hope. Right? Why ask that question? Now, he doesn't necessarily believe, but like he's like, you serve this God. Like, it's been amazing. Was that God able to rescue you, Daniel? The lions aren't going to answer. He's hoping Daniel's in there. Verse 21, Daniel answered, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. Verse 23, The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Just in case you miss how brutal this land was. Then the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. He had them thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. The lions leaped on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. Just in case you thought maybe they were full before they put Daniel in there. Maybe they were nice lions that day. Listen, that's not God saying to do that. That's just recording what Nebuchadnezzar did, right? This is so crazy. This is so crazy. Can I tell you, as we dive into a little bit different part of this story in just a minute here, had God not rescued Daniel, Daniel's faith would be no less amazing to me. Had Daniel died in that lion's den, the fact that a boy refused to be brainwashed by adults, stood firm for his God, and would not back down in the face of overwhelming odds is no less amazing. It's not the rescue that's just amazing. It's the whole story of trusting in God no matter what the story is. Right? There have been lots of people throughout history who loved Jesus with all their hearts and had faith that they could be rescued, and they still died for the gospel. Right? That has happened. It's still happening today. People standing firm in their faith for Jesus, and sometimes they die. Is their faith any less precious? Not even a little bit. Was their faith somehow broken because God saved Daniel and not them? Not at all. Who are we to judge that? That's not our place. All we can do is look at it and judge fruit. And the fruit is they went to their grave for their faith. That's pretty amazing. Where do you find that kind of faith? Where do you find this kind of courage, strength, and hope in God? When I was in high school and in college, it was really trendy. And I'm not saying that derogatorily. Preaching has trends just like everything else does. But it was really trendy at that time to preach martyr messages, right? To really get people stirred up with stories about martyrs. You think about it. For those of you who are doing faith, especially in a charismatic church in the late 90s, mid 90s to early aughts, right? Like, how many martyr messages did you hear at that time? Right? Like, it was just something that happened, right? We get people all riled up and fired up, and we tell these stories and be like, would you stand for Jesus today? That's a great question to answer, by the way. I'm not mocking them. But it always felt really interesting to me as a teenager sitting in eastern Montana in America. I didn't ever really feel like death for my faith was going to be on the table for me. So it was all kind of subjective. Unless I go be a missionary somewhere else, right? Like, it all just felt a little subjective. I would like to believe that if I was put in a place, if somebody had walked into my school with a gun, that then, especially when Columbine happened, and we had that young lady who was asked if she believed in Jesus, and she said yes, and she got shot in the head for it. Like, then it was like, see, it happens in America. I remember that. It just resonated so clearly in my life. That was like the first real public school shooting that I remember as a kid. I know they happened before. I know we had one here before that happened. But it just was one of those things, like, could I do that? And I've just become convinced over my life that if I live the right life, I'm going to die the right death, right? My job isn't to focus on how I'm going to die. It's going to be, how do I live, right? Like, come that day, be it on the way home from church today, or be it 50 years from now, on that day, should the Lord not tarry, and I'm facing death, not you know, being caught up in the sky, I would love to believe, and I truly do believe, if I live my life for God, I'm going to die the way he needs me to die. So I don't need to spend a whole bunch of time figuring out, am I going to die the right death? The question I need to ask myself over and over again is, am I living the way Jesus would have me live? Does my life reflect him right now? And I want to, like, I believe that miraculous things can happen in the last moment, right? Like, I believe for some of you who faced incredible trials in this last year, you walked through them with your head up, trusting in Jesus. And it really just blindsided you. You might have even been dry going in, but you found Christ and faith in the middle of it and you walked through it. But can I just point out something that Daniel did? Excuse me, something that Daniel did, as was his practice. I want you to just look at the beginning of this chapter we started with the lion's den. I want you to go back to Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. This is crazy. So this is round two, okay? Just in case, I probably was talking about Nebuchadnezzar a little too late in this story. Nebuchadnezzar is the one that comes and takes them. The Medo-Persians then take over the Babylonian Empire, and we get Darius, right? Daniel's been brought to great authority under Nebuchadnezzar. Darius comes, and we have all this stuff going on. Like, it's this wild, crazy thing where Daniel's now an older guy, and we have all of this stuff. But we see all of these happenings, and how does this guy who is a foreigner rise to power with two different pagan kings, right? Two different kings that have nothing to do with their faith. And we start to see all this stuff, but it's his faith in God. God has given him great ability, and he finds favor over and over again. A second time, verse 4, then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. What does that mean? What does it mean? I'm asking you a question. The typical thing that would happen would be a response would come. They're trying to have a coup. They're trying to get rid of him. They're looking into his affairs. What does that mean? How he handles government affairs. What does that mean exactly? See if he's treasonous. Yep. What else? Catch him in a lie. Yep. How about it? What else? Huh? Plotting against him. Yep. You think anybody went through his books? Is he spending money in the right places? This guy's been in power for a while. Has he told lies? This guy doesn't serve our God. Is this God making him break our laws? They're going through everything they can find to try and find a spot where Daniel can be accused for his government practices. How long do you think it would take us to find a flaw in pretty much any of our civil servants if we went through their entire life with a fine-tooth comb? Not probably super long. Listen, God bless people who want to try and lead well. I'm so grateful for them. I do not want their job. Pray for them. They need it. I'm not trying to be like, oh, they all the devil. They just need prayer because they're humans doing an incredibly difficult job. Verse 4, then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. Not only could they not find something to condemn him for, an obvious break in the law, they couldn't even find anything to criticize him for. Let that sink in. They couldn't even find a single thing they could bring to the king and be like, yeah, this just isn't awesome. Much less say, oh, he broke the law here. So they conclude our only chance of finding grounds of accusing Daniel will be in connection to the rules of his religion. So we're going to race bait him. That's what's happening. We're going to use his religion and his race against him. Because that's the only way we're going to be able to do this. There's nothing in his ledgers. There's nothing in his relationships. There's nothing to find to take to the king. Our only chance is that he's from a different country and serves a different God than us. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. We are all in agreement. We administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors. That's a lot of people if you didn't do the math. That the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. They totally played to his pride. You're so great and mighty. And you're the only one who deserves to be worshiped in our country. How dare anybody else pray to anything other than you? You're so great. Your hair's awesome. Your teeth shine like pearls. You're so strong and mighty. You can bench press 9,000 pounds. They're just buttering him up. Get it? That's what's happening. They're totally playing to his pride. And he falls for it. He plays right into the game. That does sound right. Nobody should pray to anybody but me. I am awesome. So he signs a law. And if you know history, if a Medo-Persian king makes a decree, they cannot revoke that law. They can try and make other laws to try and change things. That's the whole story of Esther. They can't just change the law. They can try and make things to work around it, but the law is just the law. For 30 days, anybody who prays to anything other than Darius is going to be thrown into the lion's den. But when Daniel learned, verse 10, that the law had been signed, he went home, knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its window open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying and asking for God's help. Daniel learns that a law has been signed that if he prays to anyone other than his God, he's going to be thrown to the lion's den. And what is his response? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to the same window that I always go to. And I'm just going to pray to my God three times a day in case you miss me during breakfast, because I know you're not a morning person. Maybe you miss me after lunch because you're taking that quick 30-minute nap after lunch. You'll have three times a day to catch me. Windows open. Daniel modeled prayer. You can see they pray right away. As young boys, they pray in those first trials when they're taken captive and they're sitting there and they're trying to figure out, like, how do we serve God in this role? What do? They fast and they pray. Right? There is a monument erected that they have to either bow to or die. What's their first response? This group of men, they pray. They change the law so that praying to their God, their way, is illegal. What's their response? They pray. They just are people of prayer. Daniel goes to the same window three times a day, as was his usual. That's important in the Bible. And he prays. He doesn't hear about it and be like, man, I haven't prayed to God in 6 months. It might be time for me to do this once. Three times a day, he's up there talking to God, thanking him for what he's done, praising him for how great he is. Daniel models prayer throughout his life, over and over and over again. And when the trial came, again, he was ready because his tank was full. He was prayed up. He was ready to deal with it. He had met with his God and was ready to face it no matter what the outcome was. When trials come into your life, and listen, I say this a lot. I wish that I could open up the Bible and I could find a verse that promised you if you just love Jesus hard enough, you'll never face a trial again. I wish I could find that verse. I would much rather preach that. But I have to just preach what the Bible says. And the Bible specifically says, when trials come your way, and it's talking to Christians when it says that, to love Jesus is not to live a life that is never going to come up against any sort of struggle. It just means you're not going to struggle alone. You're always going to have Jesus with you. When trials come, are you ready? Or are you clinging to fumes and just desperately saying, God, help? Listen, God can help either way. God can help either way. But I'll tell you how I would rather enter a trial. Full of Jesus, resting in him, with a tank full because I'm just living life for him every day. I can tell you from experience that having Christian disciplines and praying and reading the Bible and loving Jesus, I can tell you from experience, it doesn't make the trial any easier. The trial itself. Hard things are still just hard. People die. People get sick. People betray. Jobs are weird. People get mad at me. I'm a pastor. It's basically my job to be here for people to get mad at me. Doesn't make any of that any easier. It's hard every time. Every time. But it sure helps my attitude. And it sure helps my faith. And it sure helps me look and find joy instead of just being able to see the struggle when I have been spending time with my Jesus. It doesn't change the circumstance. It changes my attitude. And that is a big deal. Daniel's story would be no less full of faith had those lions ate him. But they didn't. And we never really see Daniel even flinch. Oh, there's a law? I'm going to go to the same window I always go to and pray. Listen, is it a lack of faith if you're in a country where you could die if you're found to be a Christian to pray behind a closed window? No. You don't have to walk into the government building in China and be like, hey, I'm a Christian, to have faith. But for whatever reason, we're not told why. We're just told this is what Daniel did. He just continues on in his life of prayer. Can I issue you a challenge for 2026? Can I just say, I believe this will help your attitude this year no matter what comes. If you're not a person of prayer, give God 5 minutes in the morning. If you're like me and mornings are the worst time of day, do it at night. Start talking to Jesus. Just go into your room, and if you don't know what to say, open up the Bible and find some prayers. I would love to show you some biblical prayers and just start repeating them. Or you could just go and start thanking God for all that he's done for you. And if you are honest, you don't have to think that hard. Even if today is your first day in a church, you can think back on your life and be like, wow, how did I make it through this? Can I tell you? The answer is real simple. God brought you through it. And start thanking God for what he's done. Take 5 minutes a day. If you're a person of prayer, if you prayed longer than I've been alive, like if you add up all the minutes you prayed, it equals more than the years I've been breathing. I want to encourage you, keep at it. Just don't give up. Don't grow faint. Don't grow weary. Let's go. Here's the other thing I'd like to challenge you with. First, I would like to challenge you to pray. Second, I would encourage you to read the Gospels in the month of January. It's four Gospels. There's 4 weeks. You do the math. If that sounds overwhelming and you're like, reading is the worst, pick one. Read it this month. Mark is the shortest. I'll give you the hint. But I would believe that most of you on your way to work could just hit play on the YouVersion app and you could listen to all four Gospels this month if you don't take time to read them. You could at least listen to them. Why is that so important? Because it's the story and life of Jesus. It's what he taught. It's his words. It's his death and it's his resurrection. And that's what our faith is all about. And I would just encourage you, take this month and pray. Focus prayer. 5 minutes a day if you're not a person of prayer. If you already are, add 5 minutes a day. And read the Gospels, or at least a Gospel this month. And see how you feel at the end of the month. Jesus, I'm coming to you for this month, and I'm going to dedicate it to your word. I'm going to dedicate it to spending time with you. And on February 1st, tell me how it affected your life, how it affected your day, how it affected your attitude. I get it. We're all busy. Everybody's busy. If you have kids, you're busy. If you have a job, you're busy. If you have a spouse, you're busy. If you're single, you're busy. If you have a dog or a cat, you're busy. If you hate everybody in the whole world and you live in an apartment all by yourself, you're probably not busy. You got lots of time. We're all busy. Everybody's busy. What are we filling our time with, though? Can you find 10 minutes a day for Jesus? I think you can. I think you can. Read. Pray. Fill that tank. Because the trial is going to come. Unless Jesus returns this afternoon or you join him this afternoon, trials will come. Would you rather face them with a full tank or an empty tank? God, you're good. I'm so grateful for your word. I'm so grateful that I don't have to have it all figured out. I don't have to do everything right. You're just good. You're always there. I just pray this month as we ring in 2026 that we start our year focused in on you, trusting in you a little more, taking another step into being more like you. God, you're good. For those who have already begun this year with struggles, God, I pray that you just reveal yourself in the middle of it. Walk with people. Be with people. Let them know that they are not alone, but that you are with them. We're so grateful, Jesus. It's in your name I pray. Amen.